Father in heaven, as we come before your presence, we recognize that we come before the presence of a great and mighty God, the God who upholds all things by the word of your power, the God who has not only created all things, but also provide us for all our needs. We thank you, Father, that you have redeemed us by the precious blood of your only begotten Son, that we can now come freely into your presence with boldness and with confidence, a deep sense of assurance that you care for us, that you love us. Father, as we draw near to you this way, we ask that you will help us to grow in our appreciation of who you really are, not just a recognition in our minds, but a deep recognition of the reality of who you are in our daily lives. They may be deeply impressed with the truth, with the sovereignty, and the implications for our lives. They will not be fearful as we go through various situations, times of difficulties, perplexities, sufferings. We may realize that our lives are in your hands, that those who walk with you will not be disappointed or put to shame. Father, we ask that you will help us, that our hearts may be ready to face, to go through whatever you desire and require of us. In the process, we may not fail to learn from whatever you desire to teach us. So Father, we ask that more and more you will help us to be able to look at life, look at things from your perspective, your accurate perception of things as they really are, from an eternal perspective. That you will not just look at things from man's point of view, from a natural perspective. That you learn to walk by faith and not by sight. And so we ask, Father, that you will continue to guide us, to teach us your ways. And even now, as we continue to look to you, we ask that you prepare our hearts, our minds, and our spirit to be receptive to whatever you say to us, whatever you desire to speak to us. That you will not be concerned only to hear of things that will meet our immediate needs, but also truths that we will be able to grasp appropriate to our minds to equip us to face whatever may come our way, to know how to apply them at the right time, the right way. We ask that you will protect us as we have this time together. We do not allow the powers of darkness in any way to disturb us, to harass us, to hinder us from hearing, from understanding, from receiving, from appropriating whatever you desire us to understand, to enter into. We commit this time to your loving hands. We ask and pray in Jesus' precious name. Amen. We continue with our concentration of the subject of appearance and reality, and this will be the 50th message. And we are on the second major category of situations, the 26th message. And the topic for today, difficult situations which may appear likely to continue indefinitely. Or degenerating towards increasing darkness and hopelessness, or developing in intensity towards a crisis and seriously damaging consequences. Difficult situations which appear likely to continue indefinitely or degenerating towards increasing darkness and hopelessness or developing in intensity towards a crisis and seriously damaging consequences. As believers, we recognize that suffering, trials, and difficulties are an integral part of faithful walk with God as we learn how to deny ourselves, to take up the cross, and follow the Lord. And at times, such difficulties and trials that we go through can be very intense or of long duration. And this may tend to evoke within us a sense of helplessness or hopelessness or even a sense of despair and a feeling of wanting to give up the struggle. And today I'd like to consider with you some issues that can be an encouragement to us and help us to persevere and to go through such times well. And it is important and helpful for us to learn well so that we may know how to apply when we go through such times. And this is an issue that will be relevant to each one of us, and at times it can be very relevant, especially when the trials are very intense and difficult. There are 3 points that I'd like to make for our consideration before I go on to elaborate with biblical illustrations. Firstly, a difficult situation or trial that has gone on for some time and appear likely to continue that way indefinitely with no way of solution in sight. And we may feel unable to endure in reality. Relief may be about to take place, though there are no obvious outward indications in that direction. In other words, there are times, situations that we go through, it's a very difficult time. The trial may be very difficult, and it's gone on for some time already, or it can even have gone on for quite a long time. And as far as you can see the situation, outward appearance, it seems likely to continue on and on indefinitely. There seems to be no solution in sight. And during such times, you may feel as if you just cannot continue any longer properly, unable to endure properly. But in reality, relief may be about to take place. Though we are not able to observe any obvious outward indications in that direction. And this is a helpful point to take note of. Secondly, situations that may seem to be degenerating towards increasing darkness and hopelessness that may tend to generate a sense of helplessness and despair. In reality, dawn may be about to break. And this is a slight variation from the first point, and that is, it's not just a trial or difficulty just continuing and appears to be continuing on in that direction indefinitely. Not only that, but it seems to be degenerating, becoming worse and worse in the sense of increasing intensity of the difficulty, and also the sense of hopelessness in that context, increasing darkness and sense of hopelessness in that situation. And so it may then tend to generate within us as we go through such a time a sense of helplessness and despair. Seems to be getting worse and worse. And the direction of hopelessness. But in reality, dawn may be about to break. There may be a change very soon, though it doesn't seem to be so. Thirdly, a situation which appears to be developing in intensity towards a crisis. And seriously damaging consequences. In reality, there may be significant and sometimes dramatic positive development soon, though it doesn't appear likely. And there are no obvious outward indication. So this is a situation in which it's not only difficult, but at a point of time we find that it is developing rapidly in great intensity and appears to be approaching a crisis linked to what seems to be rather seriously damaging consequences about to take place. But in reality, the timing may be such that actually something significantly positive may be about to take place, and sometimes it can even be a dramatic positive development. Though outwardly there doesn't appear to be any indication in that direction, it doesn't appear to be likely, it can happen. It is very important when we go through times of great difficulties and trials that we do not lose heart. And we must continue to be faithful, to persevere, to pray, to trust the Lord, and continue to actively seek to do our part well. This is a brief summary of the posture that we should take, but I will elaborate more on this as we go along and develop feeling, even more so in the next message. But now I want to look together with you at a few biblical examples, a few biblical illustrations to help us understand these issues and how to go through such times well. First of all, let us learn from what Joseph went through. We've considered the story of Joseph and what he went through from other angles, but today we will concentrate from this angle on the subject matter that we are considering. Now we have, in our consideration of the story of Joseph, we've seen how he was sold by his own brothers as a slave and ended up as a slave in a foreign land, in the land of Egypt, because they were jealous of him. This is summarized in Acts chapter 7, verse 9. Acts chapter 7 verse 9 says, "And the patriarchs became jealous of Joseph and sold him into Egypt, and yet God was with him." His brothers were jealous of him, that was why they sold him into Egypt. Now to be sold as a slave, and by your very own brothers, and then ending up as a slave in a foreign land. This is a situation that is not easy to respond well. Not easy for a person to respond well when we go through such an experience. It's indeed a very difficult time. But what seems worse was yet to come. Because we know that after this he was imprisoned because of false, malicious accusation, and because of his faithfulness to God and steadfast stand on a life truth. That is because he refused to yield to the aggressive and persistent attempts by his master's wife to seduce him. Which led to the false accusation and the great injustice done to him. This is recorded for us in Genesis chapter 39, verses 7 to 20. We'll just look at this quickly. You know that in Egypt, Joseph ended up as a slave of Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh. This is in verse 1. And then tells us in verse 7 how his master's wife looked with Lisa at Joseph and said to him to lie with her. Verse 8, but he refused. And verse 9, he says, "How could I do this great evil and sin against God?" He wanted to be faithful to God, and he made a stand. But it came about as she spoke to Joseph day after day that he did not listen to her, to lie beside her or be with her. It is a very difficult thing in that context. A very great temptation and a persistent one. But not only that. One day, when there was no one else in the house and he was doing work in the house, verse 11 tells us, then verse 12, she caught him by his garment saying, "Lie with me." It was a very aggressive approach. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and went outside. Sometimes it's a brave thing to make a stand and stand on your position. But sometimes you have to flee, as Paul says, flee immorality. And literally here, Joseph fled from context of immorality. If you were to stay and you to the master's wife, so he left his garment in the hand and fled and went outside. Although what he did was very commendable, we see the treachery of this woman who actually then falsely accused him. First of all, mentioning to the others, the men of a household, verse 14, how this Hebrew slave had come in to make sport of her. How he came in to lie with her, but she screamed. And verse 15, came about when he heard that I raised my voice and screamed, that he left his garment beside me and fled and went outside. And when the master came home, she spoke to him in like manner. The Hebrew slave whom you brought to us came in to me to make sport of me. And it happened as I raised my voice and screamed that he left his garment beside me and fled outside. False, malicious accusation. And we see here the master apparently didn't investigate the matter properly. Instead, he became very angry with Joseph. Verse 19, when he heard these words of his wife, saying, "This is what your slave did to me," that his anger burned. Verse 20, so Joseph's master took him and put him into jail. it's even more difficult to go through this kind of false accusation and great injustice when you have not done anything wrong, and when you are seeking to be faithful to the Lord and also to make a stand for the truth. And a person in Joseph's context can easily feel that there is no way out of his predicament. His master is one who had looked upon him with favor and gave him responsibilities, is now even the one who turned against him, and so he ended up in jail. So it seems as if there is no way out of his predicament. First of all, as a slave, to come out of that position, he wasn't able, and now not only a slave, but a slave in prison. So this is the kind of situation and experience that tends to discourage a person. A situation that seems to get from bad to worse, even though a person seeks to be faithful to God. And then there is a glimmer of hope, an opening, a possible way out, because Joseph helped to interpret a positive dream for the chief cupbearer to Pharaoh, who was in prison, and Joseph told him to remember Joseph when he was restored to his office, and to mention him to Pharaoh and to get him out of the prison. Chapter 40, verses 12 to 14. Joseph said to him this interpretation: how within 3 days Pharaoh will restore him to his office. And then verse 14, he says, "Only keep me in mind when it goes well with you, and please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of his house." So there's a glimmer of hope now, a way out for him to come out of prison. And then this hope seems to be dashed, because the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, verse 23 of chapter 40. When he was restored to office, it mentions here, "Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him, and 2 years passed by," as chapter 41 verse 1 tells us. So if we picture ourselves in such a context, we'll find that with passing time, in such a situation, you would then tend to evoke within us a sense of increasing, or rather, I would say the situation then tend to be increasingly discouraging, because increasingly you will seem less and less likely for Joseph to be remembered. In other words, I'm saying, it tells us of 2 years, 2 years passed by, but with the passing of time, more and more, it can be a discouraging kind of context, and also seems increasingly less likely for Joseph to be remembered, and the situation would seem increasingly hopeless in the sense of coming out of his predicament, and the person may feel difficult to persevere, may feel that there's no way out. Now there's a glimmer of hope, and that also seems to be dashed. But actually, dawn was about to break. That is, with passing time, the situation may seem to be increasingly discouraging and hopeless. But actually, with passing time, it was actually nearer and nearer the dawn, and nearer the deliverance from the predicament and solution to the problem. Because with passing time, it seems less and less likely for him to remember, so it seems less, more and more hopeless. But the reality is, it is actually moving towards the dawn, moving towards the end of the 2 years when he was going to be delivered, a solution to the problem. So Joseph, as he goes through that situation, likewise for us, as we go through various situations, we not know at the end of the 2 years what is coming. So in that context, it may appear to be increasingly hopeless, but actually is moving nearer and nearer the dawn and the deliverance and the solution to the predicament, the difficulty and the trial. the situation that Joseph was in could have continued that way, could have just continued on in prison. But God intervened. God caused Pharaoh to have a dream which troubled his spirit and which no one could interpret. And then in that context, the chief cupbearer remembered the imprisoned Hebrew youth who could interpret dreams. And as a result of his mentioning to Pharaoh, Joseph was brought before Pharaoh, interpreted Pharaoh's dream for him, and was exalted, becoming the ruler over all Egypt. As we consider what happened to Joseph, we can take note of a few points. A, the dream that Pharaoh had was clearly from God. God specifically intervened. You can see this in chapter 41, verse 25. Joseph said to Pharaoh, "Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has told to Pharaoh what he was about to do." It was God's specific intervention. But take note that God's intervention through Pharaoh's dream and leading to Joseph's exaltation to rulership over the land of Egypt, this was not an isolated thing, but rather it's helpful to recognize that throughout there was actually the sovereign undertaking of God. Throughout Joseph's experience, God was sovereignly undertaking, not just at that point of that intervention. We look at Genesis chapter 45, verses 5-8. Joseph talking to his brothers, telling them, "Do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here." The brothers sold him to Egypt. It is, "Do not be grieved or angry with yourself because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life." Actually, it was part of God's plan for Joseph to be in the land of Egypt. God had a plan. And part of it is for Joseph to be in Egypt. "So God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance." There's meaning in what Joseph was going through. "Now therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord over all his household and ruler over all the land of Egypt." During times of difficulty, especially if we seek to ensure that our lives are right before God, that we are walking with Him, our actions are right, it's very helpful to be deeply impressed with the truth of God's sovereign watching over our lives, undertaking, and not only that, there's definite meaning, direction, purpose in all that we go through, not just for the specific event and situation, but that God has an overall plan, purpose, meaning for our lives. And we must learn to faithfully walk with Him, learn from Him, and then to ensure that His will is fulfilled in our lives. And in previous messages, we've seen how what Joseph went through was actually very helpful to prepare him for that high office. Even the sufferings and trials and being a slave and being imprisoned, all these were rather helpful experiences for him. But if he had been just depressed, upset, and failed to respond well to the Lord during the times of trials, then it would be very sad, because he wouldn't have learned and equipped himself properly. And this remark here in verse 8, "Now therefore, it was not you who sent me, but God." It's quite clear that the brothers had sold Joseph into Egypt. But yet Joseph said, "It was not you who sent me here, but God." Now this helps us, as we ponder about it, reflect upon it, to learn how to view things from a proper perspective. Yes, Joseph's brothers did sell him into Egypt, and they were also responsible for serving him as a slave. But the perspective here, it was not you who sent me here, but God, is that beyond all these things of, that the brothers were doing to him, God was in sovereign control over the whole matter. And that was the more important thing in the eyes of Joseph, to be able to recognize that it was God who was sovereignly in control. The only thing Joseph had to be careful about is to ensure that he was faithful to God, and then he can have a deep sense of assurance that his life is in the hands of God, who is sovereignly undertaking this meaning, purpose, direction, in spite of whatever man may seek to do to him. He is not at the mercy of circumstances or what men may try to do to him. So it's very helpful for us to live with this deep sense of assurance of God's sovereignty of our lives. Especially during times of great difficulties and trials. And not only that, it's also helpful as we ponder about what Joseph went through to realize that besides the very dramatic intervention of God just before Joseph was exalted to rulership over Egypt, to realize that actually in the midst of the long period of various trials and difficulties and hardship that Joseph went through as a slave and in prison, that there are various encouragements and relief along the way. There are various encouragements and relief along the way. It's quite clear that there would have been many other aspects not recorded specifically for us in detail, but let us look at some aspects of the encouragement. First of all, chapter 39, verse 2, and the Lord was with Joseph, and so he became a successful man. This tells us that the whole thing was not only God watching over sovereignly the whole of Joseph's life and the period that he was going through, but there was something positive and meaningful that was taking place. The Lord was with Joseph. And verses 3 and 4, the encouragement, the relief along the way. It wasn't just trials, darkness, or very hard time, very intense sufferings, and that's all. But there was encouragement, relief, periods of relief, moments of relief along the way. Even as a slave in a foreign land, because God was with him, he says, verse 3, now his master saw that the Lord was with him, and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight, and he became his personal servant, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he owned, he put in his charge. This would be an encouragement to Joseph. Even as a slave in a foreign land, the Lord was with him, helped him, and his master saw that God was with him, and he became overseer over the master's house and all that he owned. And after the false accusations by the master's wife and being imprisoned and this great injustice done to him, again we find from verses 20 to 23, how when he was put into jail, verse 21 says, but the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him. So the sense of the fellowship with God, the presence of God, God's encouragement to him, including the second part of the verse, and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. So even in jail, the chief jailer committed to Joseph charge all the prisoners who were in the jail, so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. The chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper. He was helping him, encouraging him, and these are aspects, as you read, you can recognize and see, this must have been encouragement to Joseph. As a slave, he was overseer of the master's house and all that the master owned. Even thrown in jail, he became the overseer of others in the prison. And sometimes in long periods of difficulties in our lives, certain aspects that are very trying and difficult, often there are also various moments of encouragement, various things that the Lord bring into our lives to encourage us, moments and periods to live, especially if the trial is over a long period of time. B. Joseph, from being a slave and then being imprisoned, this may seem to be getting from bad to worse, but actually Joseph was getting nearer to Pharaoh and nearer to deliverance from his predicament and nearer to his exaltation. Even his being sold as a slave to Egypt by his jealous brothers is actually also a step in the direction of the fulfillment of God's purposes for Joseph and also through Joseph's life. But sometimes a person going through such a situation or such a period of time may not be able to see all these things because God may not have revealed to the person. So as you go through, it may seem to be getting worse, but it is a step forward actually. And sold Egypt also, a step in the direction of the fulfillment of God's purposes. So as we love the Lord, seek to walk with Him, let us trust God that He is undertaking for us, and if we are faithful, we walk with Him, each step of our lives, each stage will be a step forward in the direction of the fulfillment of God's purposes for our lives and through our lives. And this recognition can be a strong encouragement to us not to lose heart, but to press on in faith. It's very helpful during such times to remind ourselves to be deeply impressed with this truth, but we must of course ensure that we are walking with God, and that is the only thing that we need to ensure. If we are ensuring that, we can take heart, we can be assured of this truth taking place in our lives, even though we may not be able to see the whole picture. Outwardly it may not appear to be so, but let us recognize the reality of what is actually taking place. See, the 2 years in prison may be rather difficult for Joseph, at least from this angle which we have considered just now, that he appears to be the forgotten man, and with passing time may seem less likely for him to be remembered, and it may then appear to be increasingly discouraging. But God has His perfect timing. God has His perfect timing. Man may be neglectful, forgetful, and fail like this chief cupbearer, but not so with God. Not so with God. Man may be neglectful, forgetful, and fail, but not so with God. God is perfectly reliable and can be depended upon. And our ultimate confidence is in God. Our ultimate reliance must be on God. And if this is true, our real confidence is in God, our real reliance is upon God, then we never need to despair, to be anxious. Yes, along the way in our walk with God, God in His goodness provides various ones who can be encouragement to us, help us, and so on. But our ultimate confidence, if it is in God, then we need not be afraid that others may either neglect us, forget about us, fail us in any way or misunderstand us, we know that God is perfectly reliable and we can trust Him. Because there are various contexts where it may appear as if our life or our fate or what is going to take place may be so dependent on the people in that context. And some of these people, as we look at them, their attitudes are not good. We feel very insecure, threatened, anxious. But let's remember that men can be neglectful, fail us, or do things with ill intentions. But if our ultimate confidence is in God, we know that we can properly have a deep sense of security and confidence in Him. I go on now to the second biblical illustration. What Paul and Silas went through, as recorded in Acts chapter 16, verse 16 onwards. Let's look at Acts chapter 16. This was in the context of faithful ministry by Paul and Silas going about doing the work of the Lord. And it mentions here, it happened that as we were going to the place of prayer, a certain slave girl having a spirit of divination met us, who was bringing her masters much profit by fortune telling. Falling after Paul and us, they kept crying out, saying, "These men are born servants of the Most High God, who are proclaiming to you the way of salvation." And she continued doing this for many days. But Paul was greatly annoyed and turned and said to the Spirit, "I command you in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her." And it came out at that very moment. So first of all, there was this slave girl who had the spirit of divination and causing great annoyance to Paul. Verse 18. And she did so for many days. So first of all, there was this great annoyance. And then after that, having cast out this evil spirit from the slave girl, verse 19 tells us how Paul and Silas were seized and dragged into the marketplace. So there was public humiliation. And the accusation that these men are throwing our city into confusion, verse 20. And are proclaiming customs which it is not lawful for us to accept or to observe, being Romans. And the crowd rose up together against them, and the chief magistrates tore their robes off them, and proceeded to order them to be beaten with rods. So after being seized, dragged, and suffering the public humiliation, they were also beaten with rods, and verse 23 says that they were inflicted with many blows. It must have been a very painful experience, but notice here, they were unjustly beaten. They hadn't committed any crime. What they were doing was proper, and they were proclaiming the truth, but they were unjustly beaten. And here, actually, in the context of those who are supposed to uphold the law, the chief magistrates. And then after that, we find that they were imprisoned. Verse 24, and he having received the command, the jailer, that is, who had received the command, threw them into the inner prison and fastened their feet in the stocks. Not only imprisoned in the usual way, but their feet were also fastened in the stocks. Very uncomfortable kind of position, and they've been beaten, badly beaten. So that was the experience they were going through. And now, with all their pains, fastened, their feet fastened to the stocks, in the prison, we can say that then, at the height of their troubles, their trial, when they appear helpless in that position, dawn broke suddenly. Donnybrook figuratively. That is, deliverance came. Verse 26. And suddenly there came a great earthquake. It was sudden, there was no indication that anything like this was going to take place. But suddenly, there came a great earthquake so that the foundations of the prison house were shaken, and immediately all the doors were opened and everyone's chains were unfastened. This was again a definite intervention by God in this context. And we find that as a result, it led to effective witness to and conversion of the jailer and his household. In verse 34, the jailer believed in God with his whole household. And also, kind treatment received by Paul and Silas. Verse 31, the jailer had asked, what must he do to be saved? And then they witnessed to the jailer how he must believe in the Lord Jesus and how they spoke the word of the Lord to him together with all who were in his house. And then verse 33, and he took them that very hour of the night and washed their wounds. And then after that, verse 34, brought them into his house and set food before them. So he received kind treatment from the jailer. From a position of helplessness, imprisoned, fastened in the stocks, with all their pains, we find that very quickly, very suddenly, there was relief as a result of earthquake and the testimony to the jailer. We find that now their wounds were being attended to, food was brought before them. And the very next day, they were released and released in dignity. If you read from verse 35 onwards, notice how the magistrates sent for a release, but Paul refused to be just released just like that, because he's been beaten in public without trial, and that they were actually Romans. And so finally, this man had to come personally and appeal to Paul and Silas, verse 39. He had to come and appeal to them personally, and when they brought them out, they kept begging them to leave the city. So they actually left the prison in dignity. As we look at the whole incident, it's quite clear that this great earthquake, under the circumstances, is quite clearly God's definite intervention. At that particular moment of time and the consequences that took place. And it is helpful to notice when the great earthquake took place, the timing of it. On one hand, the timing of it was in a context where Paul and Silas were helpless, fastened in the stocks with all their pains, and the very timing of it was while Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns of praise to God in verse 25. But about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns of praise to God, and the prisoners were listening to them, and suddenly there came a great earthquake. So notice the timing of it. It's helpful to take note of that. That is, it is in the context of positive expression of faith, worship, prayer, and faithful testimony. Even while the other prisoners were listening, even in their pains and sufferings, Paul and Silas were not just nursing self-pity or just over-conscious of their pains and sufferings, but they were more conscious of the greatness of God, worshipping God, expressing their faith in Him, and continuing to be a faithful testimony unto the Lord. Now this is indeed a very beautiful picture and a helpful one to fix firmly in our memory as an example for us, an encouragement to us to live in like manner, and during times of difficulties, to bring to our remembrance this picture of Paul and Silas having been beaten quite severely, unjustly, imprisoned, feet fastened to the stocks, and worshipping God, praising Him, being a powerful testimony in that context, and in that context, the deliverance came, the great earthquake, God's intervention. A beautiful picture of how we should live our lives. The third biblical illustration, let us learn also from what Moses and the Israelites went through. From the time Moses went to Pharaoh until the successful exodus of the Israelites from Egypt. What Moses and the Israelites went through from the time Moses went to Pharaoh until the successful exodus of the Israelites from Egypt. Let us look at Exodus chapter 4 from verse 28. Exodus chapter 4 from verse 28 shows to us that what Moses and Aaron did from there onwards was in obedience to God. Earlier, we know how God had called Moses to deliver the people, and chapter 4 of Exodus from verse 28, how Moses told Aaron what the Lord had spoken to him and what God had commanded him to do. Then verse 29, Moses and Aaron assembled all the elders of the sons of Israel, spoke to them what the Lord had spoken to Moses, and we see there was positive response to the people. They believed, and when they realized how God was concerned about them in their affliction, they bowed low and worshipped. So after this point of time, it was encouraging, it was positive. But then, from chapter 5 verse 1 onwards, we see how Moses and Aaron spoke to Pharaoh, and in the name of the Lord, thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, let my people go, that they may celebrate a feast to me in the wilderness. But there was negative reaction on the part of Pharaoh. Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and besides, I will not let Israel go. So there was negative reaction on the part of Pharaoh, and not only that, as we read on, we find that things became worse and worse for the Israelites. It led to greater intensity of hardship and suffering, because Pharaoh was upset with this request. Verse 5, this look, the people land are now many, and you would have them cease from their labors. And the same day, he commanded the taskmasters for the people and their foremen, saying, you are no longer to give the people straw to make brick as previously. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. But the quota of bricks which they were making previously, you shall impose on them. They were already making bricks in the past. Now they have to make the same quota, but no straws provided. They have to gather for themselves. He says, you are not to reduce any of it because they are lazy. Therefore they cry out, let us go and sacrifice to our God. Because they are lazy. And as a reaction to this request to go and sacrifice to their Lord, let the labor be heavy on the men, and let them work at it, that they may pay no attention to the false words. A direct reaction to what Moses has spoken to Pharaoh in the name of the Lord. And so the situation became very difficult for the Israelites. Verse 12, they scattered to all the land of Egypt to gather stubble for straw, and the pressure was on them. Verse 13, to complete their work quota, just as usual, but without the straws provided. And when they were not able to accomplish it, verse 14, the foremen of the sons of Israel, whom Pharaoh's taskmaster had set over them, were beaten. They were not able to fulfill the quota, they were beaten, and they were asked, why have you not completed your required amount? And so the reply was, why do you deal with us in this way? We do not have the straws given to us. How can we keep on making those bricks that you require? But this was not accepted. The reply in verse 17, you are lazy, very lazy. Therefore you say, let us go and sacrifice to the Lord. So go now and work, for you shall be given no straw, yet you must deliver the quota of bricks. Now, there's a context which must have been very discouraging to the Israelites. The foremen of the sons of Israel saw that they were in trouble because they cannot reduce the quota of bricks, and yet now it seems very difficult for them to comply. And so they met Moses and Pharaoh and complained. They not only complained about the difficulties that they were facing, but they complained against Moses and Aaron. Verse 21. May the Lord look upon you and judge you, for you have made us odious in Pharaoh's sight and the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to kill us. So on the one hand, bear in mind the difficulties that the Israelites were going through. On the other, ponder also the kind of difficulties that Moses and Aaron was going through. The Israelites not only felt it difficult and shared about their difficulties, but they were complaining against Moses and Aaron. May the Lord look upon you, bringing in the name of the Lord, and judge you, for you have made us odious in Pharaoh's sight. A very bad thing to say, because they already knew. Moses and Aaron had shared with them how this was in line with God's desire, God's will, and they had agreed. They responded positively, but when things began to be difficult, they say, you have made us odious in Pharaoh's sight, and put a sword in their hand to kill us. The situation, the state of affairs, appears much worse. There's greater intensity of hardship and suffering. It may seem as if the whole thing was a mistake. And not just the Israelites. Notice also the effects upon Moses. Even Moses was adversely affected. Perhaps momentarily. But Moses also was adversely affected, and he did not see the situation in the correct perspective. And Moses actually complained to the Lord. The words in verse 22 and 23 seems to be words of complaint. The Israelites suffered. They complained against Moses. Now Moses was complaining to the Lord. Verse 23. Moses returned to the Lord and said, O Lord, why hast thou brought harm to this people? Why didst thou ever send me? These are not words that ought to be said. Ever since I came to Pharaoh to speak in thy name, he has done harm to this people, and thou hast not delivered thy people at all. Why have you brought harm to this people? Why did you send me? These are words spoken because Moses was under great pressure, and the situation, the state of affairs, appears to be much worse than at the beginning. The whole thing was pressing upon him. Perhaps momentarily he felt this way and couldn't see the situation in the correct perspective and complained to the Lord in this way. But notice the words, and thou hast not delivered thy people at all. As we realize, there's so many rounds of confrontation yet lying ahead. These words sounds rather interesting for him to say, and thou hast not yet delivered thy people. This was only just the very beginning. There's a long way to go. Right at this very beginning, Moses was talking about how thou hast not delivered thy people. So even a man of Moses' stature can feel discouraged. It's possible you can get discouraged, you can feel discouraged. But as we look at the scene here, we know, we can say quite clearly that he ought not. We can see that he ought not, though he felt discouraged in that situation, but he ought not, because the Lord was with him, and actually the Lord was sovereignly undertaking the whole thing. So it's helpful for us in this, up to this point, of what has been taking place, to take note of an important truth. And that is, occurrences like these, or this kind of greater intensity and hardships, this kind of occurrences that the Israelites went through, the intensifying of hardships, suffering and pressures, such occurrences are common when we are moving in the direction of the will of God. Of course, it can also happen because of sin and so on. I'm saying when we are moving in the direction of the will of God, the intensifying of hardships, suffering and pressures, such occurrences are common. Especially where the issues involved are significant, because the evil one will be opposing and will be seeking to hinder us, to discourage us, to do all he can to stop us from working out the will of God in our lives, whether it be in our personal development or the Lord's work, whatever it may be. It is very helpful for us to take note of this principle and truth and to recognize it when it is in operation. So during such times, we must recognize what is happening and take a proper, definite stand and not give in, give way to what the powers of darkness are seeking to do, what the evil are seeking to do. And we must take our stand, a very definite stand, not a wavering one, but a definite stand to affirm our faith in the Lord and to pray against and to resist what the powers of darkness are doing in the situation, in the name of the Lord and the power of the Lord. And in that situation, to strengthen ourselves in the Lord. To definitely look to the Lord to strengthen us to take our stand. This is very important, because if we were to give way to this, the momentum in the direction of discouragement and despair will build up and will become increasingly difficult to persevere or to come out of that low spirit or depressed kind of spirit. But if we take a stand and trust the Lord and learn to strengthen ourselves in Him, call upon the Lord, then the Lord will help us, and we can then learn to go through that context well, to learn from Him and be triumphant in that situation, and to make progress in the direction of the fulfillment of God's purposes for our lives and through our lives. Helpful also for us to take note in this context, encouragement that came from the Lord. We saw how the Israelites were going through, they couldn't take it well. Even Moses found it difficult. Then we see the encouragement that came from the Lord. Although it was not right for Moses to speak in this way, the Lord, in His patience and goodness, granted encouragement. Chapter 6, verses 1 to 8. As we look at this passage, it's helpful for us to realize that the Lord does encourage those who desire to walk in His ways. If in our hearts genuinely there's this desire to walk in His ways, the Lord does encourage us in various ways. And as we read through this passage, also it'd be helpful for you to take note of the very strong emphasis on the word I as the Lord spoke, to help us to realize the importance of focusing on Him, to trust Him and what He will do. So let us then look at what happens here. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh." Not so much what you will do, but what I will do. "For under compulsion He shall let them go, and under compulsion He shall drive them out of His land." God is going to see to this. God spoke further to Moses and said to him, "I am the Lord." That Moses may then be able to have a proper perspective and focus again. Concentrate on the Lord and who He is. "I am the Lord. I gave Abraham, Isaac, Jacob as God Almighty, but not by my name, Lord. But by my name, Lord, I did not make myself known to them." Verse 4, "And I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they sojourn." So there's a covenant and there's a land which the Lord wants to give the Israelites, and he will bring it to pass. Verse 5. And furthermore, I have heard the groaning of the sons of Israel, because the Egyptians are holding them in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. Say therefore to the sons of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out. As I mentioned, helpful to focus, to take note. A very strong emphasis. The Lord is drawing attention to himself. That Moses and the Israelites learn to focus on him and what he is doing, rather than the circumstances around them or their own weaknesses and frailties, and whether they can go through it, can endure what is going on. God will bring it to pass. Verse 6, say therefore to the sons of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from their bondage. You may be suffering now, but I will deliver you, redeem you. I will also redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. Then I will take you for my people, and I will be your God. Words of encouragement, helping them to recognize the truth. And you shall know that I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you to the land which I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I will give it to you for possession. I am the Lord. So you read through this passage properly, you will see a very strong thrust that comes through. On what basis the encouragement? I am the Lord. They can trust him, they must focus on him, and he will bring it to pass. Whatever may be the outward circumstances, difficulties that may be surrounding them, however difficult Pharaoh may appear to be, God Almighty will bring it to pass. And Moses spoke to the people, verse 9, but we see that there was no positive response, verse 9. And helpful also to take note why there was no positive response, in spite of the words that God has spoken to Moses. So Moses spoke fast to the sons of Israel. All these things the Lord has spoken, Moses spoke to them. But they did not listen to Moses. They didn't respond positively. Why? On account of their despondency and cruel bondage. Despondency, you look at the margin of the American Standard Bible, it says literally shortness of spirit. It's helpful for us to reflect upon. Their spirit was negatively affected by the hardship and suffering, the cruel bondage. And because their spirit was negatively affected by the hardship and suffering, they were unable to respond well. So take note, it's not just hardship and difficulties. That is not the critical part. The critical part is how do we go through, how is our spirit affected? If we learn to go through well in the midst of difficulties, our spirit can actually be stirred up to greater strength of conviction and be strengthened in the Lord and make progress in our lives and respond well. But our spirit can also be negatively affected. So it's important to take note that such circumstances can to discourage and affect our spirit negatively. That is the tendency. When we go through such times, we must take note of this. Our spirit tends to be negatively affected. The tendency is there. But it is important for us to ensure that this does not happen. And to realize it need not happen. And we must choose, and we can choose, not to give in to the pressures, not to give in to the negative directions. And we can choose to exercise faith, to trust God, to call upon him, to focus on him, to strengthen ourselves in him. Otherwise, if you fail to do so, then you'll move in the direction of a low spirit, our spirit negatively affected, weighed down, and we then will be unable to respond well in the situation, and not only that for the specific moment, but rather also there'll be a momentum in a negative direction. It builds up with time, and then it can become worse and worse, and it can become increasingly difficult to overcome. So we must not let that happen. And if to some degree this has already been taking place in our lives, we must take steps not to let it continue in that direction, but to look to the Lord and to move in a positive direction. And then we see after this, what follows? Were many rounds of confrontation with Pharaoh in spite of many manifestations of God's power. This was a significant period in the history of Israel, a significant time, and also a significant period in the outworking and fulfillment of God's purposes. So serious issues are involved, and it's very likely that the evil one will be actively at work and significantly at work throughout this period of the various confrontations. So you look at chapter 7, verse 10 onwards, we see manifestation of God's power, but Pharaoh's heart was still hardened and he didn't hearken. Chapter 7, verse 10, Moses and Aaron came to Pharaoh, and Aaron threw down his staff and became a serpent. All this was what God had taught Moses and his provision for them, that the power of God may be manifested and recognized. But the magicians of Egypt did the same with their secret arts. So the power of darkness in operation in this context. And they also threw down their staffs and they became serpents. But there's a difference. Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. The power of darkness, they do have power, but here the sovereignty of God, the almighty power of God, was manifested. All the other staffs were swallowed up by Aaron's staff. Yet Pharaoh's heart was hardened and he did not listen to them. So in spite of the manifestation of God's power, Pharaoh's heart continued to harden, and this led them to the manifestation or the miracle of water becoming blood in chapter 19, or rather in verse 19, how the Lord said to Moses and instructed Aaron, and that's what they did, take the staff and stretch out the hand over the waters of Egypt, that all the pools, reservoirs of water may become blood, and blood throughout the land of Egypt, both in vessels of wood and vessels of stone. This was a fantastic miracle that took place. But in spite of all this, Pharaoh's heart was still hardened. Verse 22. The magicians did the same with their secret arts, and Pharaoh's heart was hardened. Of course, what they could do was only to a limited degree. But Pharaoh's heart was still hardened, and he did not listen to them. And then this resulted in the miracle of frogs. Chapter 8, verse 6. Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. As a result of this miracle taking place, we find in verse 8, Pharaoh agreeing, "I will let the people go." Pharaoh called Moses and Aaron and said, "Entreat the Lord that he may remove the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go that they may sacrifice to the Lord." Pharaoh here agreed, but he went back on his word. When the Lord was entreated, the frogs were removed from the land of Egypt and left only in the Nile. Pharaoh went back on his word in verse 15. When Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his heart and did not listen to them. We can see here that Pharaoh is a very difficult and stubborn man. And the Israelites, Moses and Aaron, in that context, it must be very trying for them. The all that has taken place, it seems very difficult for the objective to be accomplished. a situation where it is easy to become discouraged, because realize that throughout this period, at any time, Pharaoh can also become very angry and do them a lot of harm, including slaughtering them. That was something that was always in the air, that is possible, that can happen. And then we find in verse 24, there were then great swarms of insects, and the whole land was laid waste. Chapter 8, verse 24. The land was laid waste by the great swarms of insects. And as a result, in verse 25, again, we find Pharaoh agreeing and says, go sacrifice to your God within the land. But there was a condition. It was to be within the land. And you find that this, although Pharaoh seems to be saying, okay, I agree, but there was this condition, and this condition was not acceptable. Verse 26, it is not right to do so, Moses said. And as we look at what happens here, it's also helpful for us to ponder about it. During times of long periods of difficulties and so on, at times we can become tempted to compromise. And here it's easy for Moses to compromise. Pharaoh had said, go, sacrifice your God within the land, and he could have compromised. Sometimes you can be tempted to compromise, and we must be careful to obey the Lord properly as he commands us. That is what Moses said in verse 20, or rather in verse 27. We must go a 3 days journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God as he commands us. We must follow the Lord fully and not compromise because of the difficulties. It must be as he commands us. There will be, during times of difficulties, various suggestions to compromise. We must be faithful. It's easy to be pressurized into compromises. But finally, Pharaoh agreed, I will let you go, that you may sacrifice to the Lord your God in the wilderness, verse 28, but make supplication for me. He agreed. But again he went back on his word in verse 32. Again, he hardened his heart, he did not let the people go. Now, if we view all these things that have been taking place all this while, we can see that it is an experience that can be rather encouraging. That can be rather discouraging when we come across such a man and such situations. Not only Pharaoh at the beginning being very difficult, but with all the manifestations of power, agreeing, going back on his word, agreeing, going back again on his word. It seems as if it is a very problematic situation, very difficult to come out of it when you have such a man. And he is Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, but his word does not hold. How then can the Israelites come out of Egypt? It seems a very problematic situation. And then this led to pestilence and the livestock. Chapter 9, verse 3. Pestilence, a very severe pestilence on the livestock. And then followed by boils on man and beast. Chapter 9, verse 9. Boils breaking out in sores on man and beast. But in verse 17, it tells us how Pharaoh still exalted himself against God's people by not letting them go. Here is the Lord speaking, still you, referring to Pharaoh, still you exalt yourself against my people by not letting them go. In spite of all these very definite manifestations of God's power and afflictions on the land of Egypt and on the Egyptians and on their possessions, Pharaoh was very stubborn. And then this was followed in verse 23, the thunder, hail, and fire. And as a result, in verse 27, we see Pharaoh saying, I have sinned. the Lord is the righteous one. I and my people are the wicked ones. Make supplications to the Lord. For there has been enough of God's thunder and hail. For I will let you go, and you shall stay no longer. When the pressure increases, the pain, the sufferings, this is how Pharaoh will tend to respond when he's hurt. And he says, I will let you go. But he sinned again, verse 34. And he saw that the rain and hail, thunder ceased, he sinned again, hardened his heart, and again refused to let the Israelites go. And then, chapter 10, verse 4, the threat of locusts. How they still refuse to let the people go, there will be locusts. And how the locusts will devour everything in the land. All that is edible by locusts will be devoured. And because of the threat of the locusts, we find in verse 7, Pharaoh's servants pleading with him. Pharaoh's servants said to him, how long will this man be a snare to us? Let the men go, that they may serve the Lord their God. Do you not realize that Egypt is destroyed? In spite of all that has been taking place, Pharaoh was still hardened, and even now his servants were pleading with him. And then from verse 8 to 10, Pharaoh agreed to let them go, but not the children. Go and serve the Lord your God. Verse 8, he said to them, go and serve the Lord your God, but then who are the ones that are going? And Moses said, we shall go with our young, our old, sons, daughters, with our flocks and herds. He said to them, thus may the Lord be with you if ever I let you or your little ones go. Take heed, for evil is in your mind. Pharaoh would have been willing to let them go if their little ones and their flocks and so on are not going together with them. So in spite of all that's taken place and over this long period of time, with so many confrontations, Pharaoh still refused to let the Israelites go according to what God has commanded, without all his conditions. And so as a result, in verse 14 and 15, we find the locusts. There have never been so many locusts, nor would there ever be again, and they covered the whole land. So the land was darkened, a very dramatic miracle taking place. And how they devoured all things so that nothing green was left on tree or plant of the field through all the land of Egypt. Verses 16 and 17, in that context, Pharaoh again confessed, I have sinned against the Lord and against you. Now therefore, please forgive my sin only this once, and make supplication to the Lord your God that he would only remove this death from me. Asking for forgiveness, requesting that the locusts be removed. But in the end, he still refused to let Israelites go. In verse 20, he still hardened his heart and refused to let Israelites go, and this resulted in darkness for 3 days. Verses 21 and 22. Finally, in verse 24, Pharaoh said, go and serve the Lord, only let your flocks and your herds be detained, even your little ones may go with you. Still a condition: flocks and herds detained, the rest of you may go, even with your children. But again, this was not agreeable to Moses, because he knew that this was not in accordance with the will of the Lord. Verses 25 and 26. Our livestock too will go with us, not a hoof will be left behind. Verse 26. And at this point of time, it's helpful then to take note of what is happening. Verse 27 and 28, we find that Pharaoh not only still refused to let them go, but now the situation seems to be getting worse and moving towards a crisis, because now there is the threat of death not only has the thing gone on for so long and so difficult, and it's very difficult to move Pharaoh and to compel him to let the Israelites go, but now it seems to be getting worse and moving towards a crisis and a threat of death. Pharaoh said to Moses, "Get away from me, beware, do not see my face again, for in the day you see my face, you shall die." So far, no indication he had said words like this. But now the threat of death, now it became a threatening and dangerous situation. It was moving towards a crisis and a climax. But it was also moving towards the climax of God's intervention. God had been intervening, and now it was moving towards a climax of God's intervention, which led to the Exodus. Chapter 11, verse 1, the Lord said, "One more plague I will bring on Pharaoh and on Egypt. After that, he will let you go from here. Not only let you go, but he will surely drive you out from here completely." Just one more plague. And that was the plague of death. All the firstborn in Egypt, which you can see in chapter 12, verse 29. At midnight, the Lord struck all the firstborn of the land of Egypt. For the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, all the firstborn of cattle. A very terrible thing that took place. Terrible in the sense of great manifestation of power, as well as the cost on Pharaoh and all the Egyptians. All the firstborn of Egypt died. And as a result, in verse 31, Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron at night. Even at night, he said, "Rise up, get out from among my people, both you and your sons of Israel. Go and worship the Lord as you have said. No more conditions. Take both your flocks and your herds as you have said. Go." Well, it may seem as if this one major aspect is that he's been compelled. But interesting to note at the end of it, "And bless me also." So you need to be able to recognize there's a good thing if he can be blessed by Moses. And so this was the climax. And as a result, the exodus of the whole nation of Israel from the land of Egypt took place. A very important historical event in the experience of the Israelites. But now to look at the whole thing of what has taken place since Aaron and Pharaoh came before Pharaoh. Since Moses and Aaron came before Pharaoh, and what happened, and all the confrontations that took place, briefly, we can see that the whole experience must have been rather trying for Moses, for Aaron, and for the Israelites. And also, there seems to be increasing intensities of difficulties, hardship. Pharaoh seems such a difficult person throughout this whole experience. In the midst of it, on various occasions, it could easily have seemed hopeless to continue on. In the midst of the series of events that took place, and Pharaoh agreeing and refusing to honor his word, a person going through such experiences can easily feel difficult and unable to endure. And in our lives, it's possible for us at times not to go through exactly the same kind of experience that what the Israelites went through, but similar times in the sense of various difficulties that go on for a long time and seem as if there's no way out, no solution to it. Okay, a person can easily feel difficult and unable to endure. And even if you endure on right until nearing the end, notice that just before the Exodus, where we saw that the situation seemed to be getting worse, seemed to be moving towards a crisis, and perhaps seriously damaging consequences that may take place, the threat from Pharaoh. In such a context, a person may give up at that juncture. And this is a point that's helpful for us to take note of. There's a point of time where you may just give up. Just at that juncture, give up the whole thing as hopeless and too dangerous to carry on. Or you may just feel too tired, too weak to carry on. But it is crucial to continue in faith, not only throughout the whole thing, but the final stretch. At the final stretch, it's very crucial to persevere on in faith, because a significantly positive development was about to take place. Even though they may not be fully aware at that time, when the Pharaoh first threatened them, and though later the Lord spoke to them, it's clearer. But in our lives, at times we may not realize, when the situation appears very threatening, the possibility of seriously damaging consequences, you may just lose heart and give up. But at that point of time, a significantly positive development may be about to take place. And at that point of time, the evil one may be stirring up problems and making a last effort to discourage us and do all he can to stop the whole thing. And if we were to give way, it would be a very serious mistake. We must persevere. Not just to simply passively carry on, but to trust God and to exercise ourselves properly and to do our part. Just one more plague and Pharaoh will let them go. We'll stop here for today. The Lord willing, for the next message, we'll ponder further the meaning of such experiences that we go through and what should be our response, how to go through them well, and how to understand what is happening when we go through such times. So today, briefly, we have sought to consider difficult situations that we go through, sometimes of a prolonged nature, sometimes of great intensity of trial and difficulty. But a difficult situation and trial that may go on for quite a long time and appear likely to continue on indefinitely, and as if no solution in sight and no way out, and we may feel unable to endure, is helpful to us to recognize that in reality, relief may be about to take place very soon, even though no obvious outward indication in the direction. And at times the situation may appear to be degenerating towards increasing darkness and hopelessness. We must not despair, because in reality, dawn may be about to break. And a situation which appears to be developing intensely towards a crisis and seriously damaging consequences